We're all required to have a disclaimer, and I have no commercial support. If anybody knows of any commercial support, I'd be glad to sign up for some. And I have a teaching position. Currently, I'm director of the podiatric training program at Metro West Medical Center, which I've done for about 8 or 9 years now. We have a PMNS 36 program, and you'll find out that's how I got involved in this program. So the outline I have for you today is a little bit about the history of the Baja Project, and then a history of Operation Footprint, which is really a separate part of the Baja Project. Talk a little bit about Clubfoot, the incidents, the differences, touch on why people volunteer, and then my experiences for, come on in. The two projects that I was on were Operation Footprint in 2007 and 2008. So a little bit about the history, and we have a California student here, is that sure? So you might find this a little interesting. It started as a clinic in the 1970s in Mexicali, Mexico. And on a weekly basis, the surgeons and the residents would go to a clinic in Mexicali. They were very successful in their program. They treated thousands of people. And the clinic ended actually because the fact that Clubfoot was almost eradicated in that area. So the people that were running it decided to move it to Central America. So that's where Operation Footprint began. It actually began in El Salvador in 1997, and it had ran for 3 years, and then it had to be discontinued because there was a series of devastating earthquakes and a hospital worker strike, so they stopped going there. So the people that run it moved it to Honduras, which is a sister country near El Salvador. Some of the surgeons that are still involved now that I worked with actually began with the Baja Project in the 1970s. This is one of my favorite pictures. Unfortunately, I think I sneezed during this. This is my two residents that went along with me in my first year in 2007. Baja is a not-for-profit status. It does get some financial support from Rotary International, and supplies are donated from Direct Relief International. We get a lot of support from the on-site the Tegucigalpa Rotary, which is right there in the city. And of course, we pay for our own flight and our own housing. We do have some Peace Corps volunteers that bring the patients from the remote villages to the hospital. The project actually restarted in El Salvador. So right now, Operation Footprint runs in El Salvador and in Honduras. It's been 2 years now back in El Salvador. So what is Clubfoot, also known as Talipes equinovarus? It has an incidence of 1 in 1,000 live births. It's a series of problems that you docs here in the audience know this. It's a tight heel cord, it's a varus position of the foot, and it's an adduction of the front part of the foot towards the midline of the body. And this is actually one of the patients from 2007. It's a pretty dramatic picture of the child walking towards you. And you can see on the clubfoot side, they actually walk on the top of the foot here instead of walking on the bottom of the foot. Clubfoot is a congenital, multifactorial trait. It's pretty much idiopathic. We don't know why. The onset begins the first trimester of birth, the 8 to 12 weeks in utero. Happens twice as common in males as females. 50% of the time it's bilateral. And the vast majority of it is congenital. Only 2% is acquired. There are associated neurological conditions with clubfoot. One of them is a picture here. This is a 2008 patient, and you can recognize that that's spina bifida there in the picture. Cerebral palsy, polio, meningitis, myelomeningocele. And this is actually an interesting, there are other conditions as well, and I just wanted to mention this one because I didn't actually know this until I did this presentation, but this is actually a child that had clubfoot surgery, but I don't know if you can see here, does that show up? There's congenital bands here. This child was born with these congenital bands, and it's just called congenitive constrictive band syndrome, and that was actually reduced by a general surgeon prior to the clubfoot surgery. So I told you I'd mention a little bit about the two main types of clubfoot, the rigid or intrinsic and the supple or extrinsic. And it's pretty hard to tell from a picture, but this is a picture of a rigid intrinsic clubfoot, and there's a supple extrinsic. Scientifically, you can classify clubfoot. There's a very well thought out classification scheme called the Pirani classification scheme system, where based on certain parameters, you give the parameter a 0, a 0.5, or 1, 0.0, welcome. Based on certain aspects of the clubfoot, curvature, medial crease, posterior crease, intervals, whether or not you can feel the lateral head of the talus, whether the heel is actually gone or missing, how rigid it is. And from all these parameters, then you would assign a number and you could basically grade the club foot. So what are the treatment comparisons between the two different types, the rigid and the supple club foot? Basically for the rigid, which is what we're involved with, basically it's surgical. And then it's followed by post-op casting and some post-op bars afterwards. You'll see some of the pictures of that. For the supple or the reducible type, you can certainly cast. One of the more famous ones that you might all know about is the Ponseti method. So here's a 2007 patient who had a surgical reduction of club foot and casted with a above knee cast. This is a 2008 patient who actually is having a long leg cast put on for reduction of club foot by casting. Dr. Ignacio Ponseti in the 1940s came up with serial manipulation and plaster casting in a long leg cast. 85% of the people also have a percutaneous, that's through the skin, TAL, and followed up with bars, which I have a couple pictures of that too, I think. And there's the child getting ready to have the above knee cast on. Another one of my residents. He was in heaven there, I have to tell you. He was absolutely in heaven. So we're talking here about neglected club foot. And what that means is that no one addressed it early on from birth. And it is common in third world countries because there's very little opportunity for conservative treatment and casting. And that's where we come in. Some of these children, you'll see the statistics, the summary, are quite old. And here's one of my favorite pictures. None of these people out there are complaining that they're waiting. They get there 2 hours early and they just wait all day. They're just very happy to, it's kind of a social issue. So anybody that doesn't want to see, I tried to pick very non-gory pictures, but anybody that wants to close their eyes, they might want to close their eyes. So what happens when we do a surgical procedure? Well, we have to release sequentially around the foot. We do a posterior release, and there's a list of all the things that we release, basically almost everything around the sequentially around the foot, posterior medial release, a lateral release. Jim was always good in anatomy here. He knows all these things. And then we followed up with some osseous procedures as well. Besides the soft tissue releases, we do some bone work as well. We have a great staff there. The entire hospital shuts down where we are, and all of the nurse anesthetists, all of the OR staff, they all work for free. They volunteer their time for the four OR days. And there's I think she's actually an anologist and a nurse anesthetist, and the child's being intubated before surgery. There's a picture of some of the soft tissue structures, the tendons that are released on the side, all the soft tissue structures on the side. And this is showing how the foot, even with that, just that one procedure, how much the foot can be straightened at that early juncture. And then jumping over to the other side of the foot, they've already had the medial release. This is showing how the foot sometimes has to be wedged and a bony wedge is taken out on the lateral side in order to bring the front part of the foot over. So the goal with this is, and this is kind of a nice picture, it shows what you need to do. The talus, which is the bone between the two ankles, the two ankle bones, is actually sticking out laterally. And this surgeon has their thumb on the talus pushing it over, and it's being temporarily pinned. And this would be that same child with some pins. Unfortunately, You'll hear a little bit about the post-op care. We don't do a lot of internal fixation. We do mostly external pins because the orthopedic surgeon who's been trained to follow our people after we leave has to care for all these pins and things. And it's much easier for him to deal with pins than it is anything else. So why do these people here volunteer? Why do the 16 trips that the podiatrists do? I found some interesting quotes on volunteering. I thought I might share them with you. We make a living by what we do, but we make a life by what we give. If you want to lift yourself up, lift up someone else. How can we expect our children to know and to experience the joy of giving unless we teach them the greater pleasures in life lies in the art of giving rather than receiving? And General Norman Schwarzkopf, you cannot help someone get up a hill without getting closer to the top yourself. And just two more. These two are a little bit closer to the clubfoot children that we do. The moral test of a society is how that society treats those that are in the dawn of life, the children, those that are in the twilight of life, the elderly, those that are in the shadow of life, the sick, the needy, and the handicapped. Hubert Horatio Humphrey. And there is no better investment in time and money than the life of a child. They are our future. So I looked up the U.S. Department of Labor. There's actually been, in the last 2 years, a slight decline in the number of people that volunteer nationwide in the United States. 0.5% less than September 06 to 07, and that was actually 2% less than the year before that. But obviously you can see by all the missions that you see in your program, there's a lot of volunteering. I think it's up in medical missions. So how did I get involved? I got involved because of my involvement as a residency director. This was my first year. These were all the residents at the conclusion of the trip. We went up to one of the oral surgeon's house, who has a very expensive house in the mountains, and we got to tour his house. And once you go, the real reason you come back is the faces of the children that you treat. If you have a couple of pictures of just some of the faces, you can see why you always want to go back. This is a young mother. She can't be more than like 17. See, there's a theme here. We bribe them with cookies. They always love cookies. Here's a little girl that I immediately got a little affinity for. She came in. She saw me and liked me, and for whatever reason. So I gave her my neuro hammer, which they loved. And you can see very quickly she realized what to do with it. She was checking everyone's reflexes. So a little bit about my experiences in 2007. When I first decided I was going to go on this, I saw it in the APMA news. I emailed the guy that was running it, and he said, oh, we can always need more people, and invited me down. So I said, okay, now I got myself into this mess. What am I going to do? So I Googled Honduras, found out that they spoke Spanish. I knew they had a U.S. embassy there. That was a good thing. Found out a little bit about the climate. And one of the mistakes I may have made is I went to the traveler's clinic. I don't know if you guys have a traveler's clinic, but I got a 6-page printout. I knew about malaria, Hep A and Hep B. I was immunized for that. This is the part I forgot to tell my lovely wife. There was TB, yellow fever, cholera, Chagas disease, dengue fever, sand flies with leishmaniasis, HIV, influenza, and whatever you do, don't pet a dog because they all have rabies. So that gave you a sinking feeling. This part I didn't tell my mother. There was men with machetes. I never even saw a machete before. There was gangs, carjacking. Don't stop for a bicycle on the side of the road because they have these fake kids laying on the side of the road to try to steal your money. There was drug smuggling in the Northern District, and there was minefields on between Honduras and Nicaragua. So obviously, knowing all this, I'm flying to Tegucigalpa for the first time. Don't speak Spanish, and it looks pretty good when we're arriving. And I'm thinking to myself, I knew I was staying at Marriott. How bad can a Marriott be? And I looked around, I said, what minefields? There's a pool, there's a health club, a bar, two restaurants, and HBO on the TV. So, first morning, I missed the screening the first time I went. There's 2 days of screening, which I'll tell you a little bit about in 2008. But I missed the screening. So the first day I got there, we went off to the hospital. I knew it was a little bit dangerous because every morning the government would actually escort us to the hospital. Of course, this guy looks younger than that mother back there. He looks like he's about 14, so I don't know how much help he would be. My first glimpse of San Felipe Hospital, which is the oldest hospital in Tegucigalpa, and it's also the one that's most loved by the people of the city. They absolutely love it there. There's two newer hospitals, which aren't utilized as much. So we arrived there. Here's the vans that they brought us in, provided by the Rotary Club. A nice banner welcoming us on this kind of shabby-looking hospital. This is actually the inside of the hospital. I don't know if you guys have ever seen a hospital like this before, but there's actually these open courtyards with chickens running around and plants. And
in New Mexico, we have ones that were...
You do? Okay, so...
It's still
being used. This one is very... And then this is actually, when I walked up the operating room, there's bars. I wasn't sure if the bars kept the people in once they're in or out. Here's lady that runs the lab at the hospital, and she actually volunteers and she actually oversees the actual 3-day surgery there, 4-day. Looked at the OR situation, looked pretty good. There's actually 4 ORs. A little bit antiquated looking, but certainly functional. So at the end of 2007, we operated on 27 children, 36 feet. They range from 6 months to 27 years old. There was 11 surgeons and 9 senior residents. I did not make the 2-day screening, but was there for the 4 OR days. Every morning, Dr. Steve Schwartz, who runs the surgical end of it, assigns the patient. You see what the diagnosis is, who the senior surgeon is, who the junior surgeon is, who the resident is, and then there's a circulator assigned to the case. So each extremity will have 4 people assigned to it. And many of these cases, as you saw earlier, are 50% of bilateral, so there could be 8 people assigned to a bilateral case. One of the more interesting things is the rounds before. Nothing starts early there, nothing starts on time, so we get there about 9 o'clock, but we don't start operating until 10 or 10:30 because we do rounds with the parents there and the children. Nobody's in a hurry, so it's an all-day event for them. And this is myself and one of the residents, and this gentleman here, you'll hear a little bit more about him later. He actually wrote the book, or the chapter, on clubfoot surgery in McGlamory's textbook, and we were lucky enough to have him there, so he's passing his wisdom on to the resident and myself. There's Mitch again. There's my 2 residents from 2007. Not a lot of x-rays to look at, but we do have some x-rays to look at occasionally. What's going on in his mind, huh? This is the same group that you saw before. They were in their civvies before, now they're in their scrubs. Close-up of one of the club feet we did. You might be able to tell from the picture this is a CP patient and a rigid club foot. You can actually see the Taylor head there. Flexible. Clubfoot. Sorry, that's a repeat. Some of the pre-morning surgical planning that's done, marking out some of the structures. Okay, so this is the part where there's a few more OR pictures, not a lot, but. So I mentioned that there's a few people in the room, there's quite a few people in. This is a bilateral case, you see both thigh tourniquets on. One of the senior surgeons and one of my residents, and our junior surgeon would be here. This is actually a pretty good intraoperative picture showing after the media release and after some of the pinning, how straight the foot is already. Another picture of the same extremity, and then the casts that are applied afterwards. One of the things that you will see is even in a successful reduced club foot, you'll have the toes will have this little adducted position, which is certainly a good trade-off from where the children started. There's some casting post-op. I was very proud of this cast, so I had to take this picture. 2008, made a few changes. I did not go to the Traveler's Clinic. Didn't want that 6-page handout again. We did 29 patients, 39 feet. Actually did 4 revisions, because even with the aggressive club foot that we do, you do see return of club feet. There was 11 of us, and again, 9 senior residents. And we did go to the screening, which was very interesting to me, because we only select a very small percentage of the people that we screen to be operated on. This is the clinic, the orthopedic clinic, where we screen. He's the 2008, a lot of the surgeons. There's Mitch again. outside the clinic. Like I said before, patients wait patiently for hours, just like in the United States. They dress their children up in their best outfit because they want to be selected, they want to be noticed. We don't sign any papers. There's no malpractice insurance in the country, or no malpractice. And the parents just are truly thankful if their children are selected to be operated on. And it certainly improves the quality of their life. Come in, come in. So one of the good things about being at the screening in 2008, I was able to see some of the children that were operated on. They bring the children back again from previous years. And here's just a sequence of a few slides of people that children that had clubfoot. Obviously, I don't have the pre-ops from previous years, but this child had a neurological disorder, but certainly had much straighter feet. You can see a little of that adduction of the toes that I talked to you about after a clubfoot. This guy, I think that was his third lollipop, honestly. So one complication that I saw that was from the previous year was a child that had bilateral clubfoot. It doesn't look like it here, but supposedly there was a Cincinnati incision, which has pretty much been discontinued now. And the child experienced a wound dehiscence, a very bad infection, which is there's a very low complication rate, but this was one of them. So I asked, you know, I was very interested in this, and I said, you know, this child required to be hospitalized, which very few of them do. They needed IV antibiotics. It was a very prolonged recovery. The child didn't walk for a long, long time. But I asked for one of the Peace Corps translators, because my Spanish is abysmal at best, and I said to the parents, would you do this again? I asked, would the child do this again? And they said, absolutely, we're so happy with the way things are going. After a year recovery, one of the worst complications that they had from the previous year, and the parents were still happy. And you can see, again, if I had pre-ops, you'd probably be even more impressed, but the feet are straight. And a lot of people ask me, who manages these people? You're there for 6-7 days. What happens to these people after they're operated on? Well, we have this Manuel Chinchilla right here. He's a great guy with a huge heart. And he takes care of all the people post-operatively. He does the pin management. He takes whatever sutures need to take out. Any inpatient management, he does all that. And then I don't have a picture of her, but we also have a local nurse who goes out in the field and actually will check on some of the people post-operatively, because some of them won't come back to the city. This is Steve Schwartz, the guy that actually runs the project. And there is some, this was ordered by Dr. Chinchilla, a Dennis Brown Bar afterwards. This child has had surgery and casting and is now in the Dennis Brown Bar. There is some special shoes. This, again, is a post-op. I think the word in Spanish is plantillas, orthotics. The casts immediately post-op have to be bivalved, which means they have the casts are all split and opened up, because in case there's any swelling in the first post-operative days, there wouldn't be any vascular compromise to the extremity. So we do see some other interesting things, too, because, you know, the people that are coming from the remote villages, they don't know really what a clubfoot is. They just know that there's something wrong with the child's foot. So I said not everything is a clubfoot. Anybody have an idea what that is? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. This is the child's hand. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. So this was cosmetic. It's one of the few cosmetic things that we did. We actually removed one of the second ray. This was kind of interesting. The residents loved this. It was a lobster claw foot. I've seen this in textbooks, but I never saw it in real life. We actually didn't select this child for anything because he was very functional, actually. We did see one congenital vertical talus, which is actually the opposite of a club foot. It's very rigid, and the talus is actually sticking out in the arch. And this is my favorite patient from 2008, and actually turned out to be my patient. When I was sitting in the screening, I said, well, it's only my second year here. I'm pretty sure I won't be assigned to this child, because look at the deformity here. She actually is 18. She doesn't look it. She was trying to impress us with the bone T-shirt there, I think. So here's Mitch. Fortunately, Mitch was the senior surgeon. I was the junior surgeon. And here's his reference right here. Wrote the book in a comprehensive textbook of foot and ankle surgery on clubfoot. This is actually the only intraoperative picture I have of that. Here's the pre-op, and here's the post-op. We actually did a medial release, a lateral release. We did a stylus stripping. We actually removed the talus. We did a talectomy. In the more serious ones, you actually have to remove the entire talus. She actually needs one more procedure. This will be staged. She'll have the next procedure this year, where a wedge will taken out laterally in order to spin the front of the foot over. So she should have a heel that's aligned with the leg, and then the heel that's aligned with the front part of the foot. It was just too much surgery to do all that surgery at one time. So we'll do the lateral procedure next year. Here she is, first post-operative day. Very little narcotics. I think they give the children Tylenol suppositories. And here you can see, even without the lateral procedure, you can see how much straighter the feet are. And this is me feeling pretty good after that. So at the end of the mission, the residents get a nice certificate. The Rotary puts on a little dinner for us, and hopefully we have someone managing the people afterwards, and we've changed a lot of lives. Any questions? You know, that's a good question. You know, there's no financial support, so it would be if your hospital would support you. If you have some experience, I think that's what they look for. And I could give you the name of the Steve Schwartz or his email contact that runs it.
So your total time at office is
about a week? About a week, yeah. And I think the screening is a very important part, because you get to see, you know, who selected why. Some people that cancel the day of surgery for, you know, medical reasons. Kids get sick a lot. And rarely they change their mind, though, that's for sure. They all wait in there. Anything else?
Dan had mentioned that the two sites that the project has worked out of, mm-hmm. is that on a rotational basis, or is that based on what's going on in the countries at any particular time?
You know, I was actually invited to go to the El Salvador mission, too, but that's another week out, another week away. I said, I can't ask my wife to take another week out. It's a little bit more, that actually, they do need more help for the El Salvador mission. It's in a less populated area. The living conditions are not as good. They don't stay at a Marriott. The pathology is actually worse. So they're really a little shorthanded in the El Salvador. If I was going to recommend a trip to go on, I would say probably the El Salvador. They'd welcome you.
Practitioners that don't necessarily have the advanced surgical training in clubfoot, are they still looking for them to come as assistants?
You know, they probably would welcome them, but you know, there would be less of a role. I mean, there's a you know, even this will be my third year, the most I ever am is a junior surgeon there. So, you know, the guys that have been doing this for a long time are always picked as the senior surgeon. There's a certain core of them. So, you know, there's a lot of hands-on that you can do even as the junior surgeon. Anything else? Very kind crowd. Okay, thank you.